Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Lord of the Rings film rights up for sale.
Oh.
Blade Runner TV series.
Okay.
And League of Free Agents. So organized play for Free League.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was drawn. I'm like, Free Agents? We're going to talk about some like League of Legends or something.
Right.
Is that a video game? Right. Right. Yeah.
They're trying to use all the words in there.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good.
It's for identity. A ton better than Metamates.
Metamates.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. I'm afraid of the
Moving
tabletop.
On.
The meta tabletop is terrifying. All right. Yeah. So starting off with the Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit film rights. So this is not only film rights. This is film, gaming rights, live events, merchandising.
So basically the rights to IP.
Right. The only thing that's carved out of this was something that was carved out very early on. So it's the Salzance company. Salzance passed away in 2017, I believe, but was a successful producer of a lot of like Academy Award winning films, has owned the rights to Lord of the Rings, like all the Tolkien properties since 1976, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so for a long time. And so I think like Bakshi like went to that company, everything to produce what they did.
When did Leonard Nimoy sing that Bilbo Baggins song?
I hope that wasn't authorized. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, I found an even worse. On one of the last, I was talking about it on one of my last cartoon streams and found an even worse Lord of the Rings song that was completely not licensed. And but it was another.
Did it have like go-go girls dancing behind it? Because that's really all that matters.
It was the image of, the only thing I could find is a YouTube video, and the image of it was the 45, you know, from like from the 60s. So
for those of us who are much younger than us, the 45 is a small record.
Yes, containing one song. So what Amazon has now, which is people are kind of debating, like, what do they actually have? Television rights for a series over 8 episodes were carved out of this rights that the Salzance company owned, and I think they dealt directly with the Tolkien estate.
Okay.
To get those rights, and that's why the time period and what they have access to is kind of unclear, and they're adding characters to because maybe they just don't have enough rights to things. So we're gonna have a very padded, kind of like The Hobbit, though. It's gonna be a very padded series where it's just like, oh yeah, and this happened too, and oh, this character you never heard of, well, he's got a stepbrother, and this guy,
We're gonna have a lot of the joke about Boromir and Faramir was just like, okay, dude playing Faramir in the D&D game went for college and came back for like a couple Christmas break. Can I play Faramir?
Right.
No, the only... Okay, I'm not... I enjoyed the Lord of the Rings stuff, kind of. I'm not a huge fan, so I haven't been following what's been going on with the Amazon series, apart from like the rampant racism about, oh my God, we have black dwarfs and get a grip. But I saw something earlier today just on social media, didn't verify it, but this kind of supports it, where like it said, Amazon does not have rights to anything in the Silmarillion. So that's kind of like, okay, it's not the prequel to The Hobbit, but it's kind of like the session zero,
right?
Where it explains a lot of the stuff in very highfalutin-y language, and it's like, oh, you don't have the rights to anything from that, so we're not going to see like the First Age or whatever the Vanir or Meyer Award. And hey, like I said, I'm not a huge fan, so like don't go rabid in the comments. What does Amazon have the rights to then? And they're going to have to make up a lot of stuff whole cloth, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because, okay, whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. And there's another thing that says there are matching rights with the Tolkien estate and the Salzance rights for the two compilations of writings that were produced posthumously by Tolkien. So the Unfinished Tales of Numenor and Middle Earth.
Amazon don't have that either.
Right. Yeah, it's a strange, and I've heard people say that Amazon has rights to like 100 and some pages of something, and they don't specify like what that actually is. So we'll see. And so the timing is interesting about with this too, because I think September is that Amazon series, and that's going to prove how valuable these rights are. Because if it's a big hit and Amazon does well with this property, it's going to show, just like the Peter Jackson films, that there's a audience and a market for it. If it doesn't, and somebody just spent a couple $1 billion on these rights, it's the timing is very interesting, and I wonder if they're trying to sell them before it's revealed that they're not that valuable.
Well, maybe.
Not really that popular. Or you can't do much with it. So the film rights reverted from New Line Warner Brothers because they weren't doing anything with the live action rights.
Right, yep.
They weren't doing anything with it. But they did. Remember we had that announcement earlier that they will be releasing that animated series about the Rohirrim? So New Line and Warner Brothers Animation will release The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. So they have some kind of rights still that they're – it's not live action, but yeah. There's something that they're still producing. They're still trying to remain right. active for. So, yeah, we'll see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I guess this means Free League had to go through them for One Ring stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're saying gaming and – yeah, gaming, live events, merchandising, there's a lot of stuff. So, yeah, this may change. And that would be really sad, though, too, because – just as they're getting ready to support, you know, depending on like what their contract is, and then all of a sudden there's a deadline. They're like, looming, and you know they're gonna hand it over to Wizards or somebody that can pay them more.
Well,
so yeah,
bring it to tabletop. Again, I haven't really followed it that closely, mm-hmm. but the One Ring Second Edition is it Second Edition that Free League is doing?
Yes, Second Edition. Yes, okay. Yeah. I'm getting There's
like
too many.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of seems like it's been like delayed because mm-hmm. people are only kind of like just now getting.
That was a logistics thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was it. Yeah.
Like that wasn't me putting blame on mm-hmm. on Free League, but it would kind of stink mm-hmm. if Free League all of a sudden goes, well, don't have the license anymore after just releasing stuff. So
and,
hopefully that doesn't happen.
That's what, what Cubicle 7 had to deal with. So maybe that there something happened there because, Cubicle 7 was developing the second edition. And here comes. Oh, actually, Free League. So, yeah, it's not quite clear. So let's speculate wildly. What would be the kind of best and worst buyers of these rights?
For a game?
Yeah, well, for gaming, yeah, I guess, so if we were going to...
Hasbro.
Right.
Hasbro, I'm just calling it now.
Yeah, and as far as films and stuff, well, I think the worst as far as the creator of this world and the thing that would cause the largest amount of spinning in the mm-hmm. grave would definitely be Disney. Like if Disney purchased the film rights, because... Tolkien is on record as despising Disney's output. Really? So from very early on, there's some great quotes. So
well, this, I mean, by the time he was, what had Disney put out around Tolkien's time?
You know, he messed with dwarves. Disney messed with dwarves, and that's a sacred thing that's been researched. So Tolkien has been quoted as saying Disney is hopelessly corrupted, and the overall effect of his work is disgusting. Some of his movies have given me nausea. So he's not being gentle about...
No, he isn't.
Damn,
that's some shade.
Opinion. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that... and also calling, Disney a cheat and not... You know, because it was basically taking public domain fairy tale properties and turning them into IPs that...
I take the point. Kind of mildly gotten off track here, but I would argue like maybe kind of around like that time anybody could have done that, right? Like a lot of fields seemed a lot more open. We didn't have these massive pop culture monopoly groups that already own fucking everything, like Disney now. So while I can certainly agree with Tolkien's point, I guess my point is it's gotten fucking worse, right? So yeah, and I would agree that Disney buying the rights to Lord of the Rings would be pretty shitty. Not necessarily because of what Disney puts out, just because I am tired of the mouse owning goddamn everything.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty brutal. And I don't know what they would do. I mean, they would just have to do a reset of, the books, so it would be odd. So I don't know. I don't know what to and anybody that would have an interesting take on it, like would do like a minimalist art film or something of Middle Earth, is not going to be able to afford these rights because I think they're estimated
they're
at
probably,
I think like $2 billion they're saying conservatively, at least $2 billion for the rights, and that's just the rights. That doesn't mean production of anything.
I stopped myself about saying, well, it's kind of worth it. Is it I don't know, right. I mean, like it's proven this is a popular, I hate to say the word franchise because they were a series of books before, right? So okay, it's worth something, right? I guess $2 billion kind of seems like more than a lot, right? Anyway,
yeah, and I think I don't know if that's the overall production of the series, but there was a like a $1 billion quote for Amazon's series. So I don't know if that was securing the rights or if that's like total like rights and total production.
Right. Hopefully the latter.
Yeah, because that is a lot of money. So actually, though, worse than Disney would be somebody we've talked about before.
Oh?
The Embracer Group or one of these like passive you know, investment firms. That would be brutal if they started getting into the game of licensing IPs and then deciding who the winners and losers were.
Well, we kind of speculate that's what they're going to do, right? Or at least make it easier for little companies under their embrace to collaborate,
produce games and comic books and stuff. Yeah, so that would be that's the worst for me. I mean, I think.
The Embracer Group just sounds fucking sinister. I mean, like, take a page from Disney, right?
Right.
Disney's got a goddamn cartoon mouse peddling their, like, stuff and snapping. And it's hard to go, oh, Disney's evil. Like, it is, but, like, anyway, the Embracer Group. Let me just, like, let us not roll off the tongue.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with those rights, and I'm not sure how soon that's going to happen. And it will be funny to see some buyer's remorse if you know Amazon completely fails.
Yeah.
Amazon completely fails, and people are like, "Yeah, no more of that for a while." Mm. So you've got these rights you're not doing much with, and more rights. Oh, speaking of Amazon and more rights and things, there was an announcement that Amazon is developing a live action Blade Runner series called Blade Runner 2099. So that's 50 years after the sequel film. And there is, and I think Ridley Scott was the person that actually mentioned this. Okay. And so he has involvement. He will at least have an executive producer involvement. And there's talk that he may direct like an episode or a few or whatever. And they've named Silke Louisa the showrunner for Apple TV's Shining Girls as executive producing also and writing on the series. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know that series, so I'm not sure.
So I can't really comment.
Yeah, and it's going to be an effects heavy. I don't know if what the setting for Shining Girls is, but this is going to be a whole nother like level of like art direction and you know stuff. Unless they go real minimal with it, unless they the world is a real wasteland.
I mean, I'm thinking about Blade Runner and the horrible mess that 49 or whatever the was. Like, you just need, like, massive, brutalist architecture coupled with a outside green screen dystopian cyberpunk cityscape shots, right? I'm not saying it's going to be cheap, right? But you could do a lot with minimal set design.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Stuff, right?
Yeah, because you could just take like one of those like movie streets, just put a lot of neon on it and rain it. You know,
pour
rain on
it,
and then
lots of clear plastic, lots of neon, lots of rain. Right. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no idea what this story would be.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Maybe as a positive.
Mm. And that's maybe why they're doing like 50 years in the future, so we can reset a different corporation and different kind of forces at work. So yeah, I don't know. There is currently an Adult Swim anime series. I think it's a CG. Is it
something
CG?
Something cyberpunk. I want to say I want to say Blade Runner, like Black or something?
Black Lotus.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think pushing the Orientalism, as far as they can.
I'm sure it will.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see what this TV series does with that. Mm. Like, are they going to fall into the Orientalist trope that's so plaguing cyberpunk now and has since the beginning, right? Because that's what the genre grew out of.
Right.
Or are we going to do something different?
Mm.
Like, all right, here's where my weird thought, right? Like the shot of Decker eating in the little ramen shop with chopsticks and how horrific that was supposed to be about this American working class Joe.
Right, right.
Being forced to be in this kind of Asian setting, right? And how everything has taken over. Has the neon lit ramen vendor become the cyberpunk staple to the point where if you leave it out, now lost one of these tropes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thing about like a movie I don't particularly like, and maybe not even a cyberpunk, Fifth Element.
Mm-hmm.
The little floating ramen job that comes down in front of Bruce Willis's thing. And like, has that become the one of the cyberpunk tropes where if you don't do it, you're like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah, and I think kind of urban decay and stuff always tries to incorporate like stand food, like Asian stand food. So yeah, I think that's going to be a thing that they, and maybe they can switch it up. It can be, I don't know. something else. They'll pick another ethnicity's food. Exactly. Yeah. But just kind of plug it in. But this is.
Sorry to interrupt. You know what I want to see? Just fucking neon lit stall food that's just fucking hamburgers and hot dogs and French fries. Like, that's kind of how you fix it. You're just like, look at all this shitty American food. It's chromed in neon and all this stuff, right? Yeah.
And everyone's trying to eat it with chopsticks.
Oh, my God. No, go opposite. Give everybody fucking forks, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the one funny thought that I had is Free League has a license for the tabletop RPG, and that's coming out this year. I think our session, if we're going to play that game, especially if they get do a quick start or something, everything that our characters do has to be read in that deadpan, empty voiceover that Harrison Ford did. So it's like that sushi, cold fish, my ex-wife. Like that's.
You're going to have to get some like voice modulation software ready, because I'm not going to be able to keep that up.
Yeah, that's just thinking about that, though, because that was like the first way they tried to reinforce the noir trope of Blade Runner. It's like, oh, that would be a nightmare to have to play a game.
Ooh, film it in black and white.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah, the technology is there, so they can probably make it look good with a lot more, like a lot of, you know, like matted in, digitally matted assets and things. So we'll see. We'll see what they're going to do. This does follow, obviously, Amazon chasing kind of genre series and a lot of sci-fi and genre series, because they resurrected The Expanse and they did.
Oh, that's still going. I thought that series had ended.
It's on its last season. Okay. Yeah. And there are more books. Okay. This is the last season Amazon's going to do. But so the Expanse, Wheel of Time, and Lord of the Rings fantasy stuff. So they're doing a lot of genre stuff. So this kind of, you know, falls in line with what they're interested in. I don't know if it's getting people to watch or subscribe. So we'll see. But and Lord of the Rings, of course, the most expensive series so far. So we'll see what kind of money they're willing to put into Blade Runner.
No, we're going back, but that's going to be a real fucking pie in their face if it explodes.
Right? Yeah. And so that might also then complicate Blade Runner. Yeah, they may just say, "Yeah, we're really."
Or really it's one season only.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think I've only seen a trailer for the Black Lotus series, but that didn't look like anything groundbreaking. No. Yeah. So yes, more Blade Runner, but it's, you know, it's timing with the tabletop. If it's you know, if you're playing that game and there's some inspiration, and that will also, I mean, that'll go beyond what Free League has licensed, because that's 50 years in the future. But you know, you can, if it's interesting and compelling, there's homebrewing to be.
Done. Well, I mean, like with the Amazon series for Lord of the Rings, like opening it up to a setting just in the future allows you more space to play. It's kind of, in my opinion, like runs into the issue of the one we talk a lot about with like licensed RPGs, right? You can do whatever you want in the sandbox of the game. However, if you don't encounter the main setting pieces of the game, are you playing that game, right? Mm-hmm. And think about it like Dune, right? Like, I'm up to book 5 of the Dune series, Heretics of Dune. And unlike fucking Star Wars, where every goddamn thing happens on this Dust Bowl Tatooine just by chance, one thing Herbert has done is like, okay, there's a reason we're always set on Arrakis, right? Like everything kind of centers around it and you don't feel like, oh fuck, we're back here again. It's like, no, it's the story of this planet. But like the Dune RPG game, if you're not on Arrakis, are you playing Dune? If you don't run into sandworms, are you Dune? Right. Okay, you got Melange and Mini Gesserit and all these groups, but how many of them do you have to encounter and deal with to be playing in that game, right? So this like Blade Runner 2099 or whatever it is series, okay, we can see like places, but what's going to make it Blade Runner and not just cyberpunk?
Right. Well, the end of every episode, the character realizes they're a replicant. Oh, yeah. So yeah,
if
Ridley Scott is directing, that's going to be the case.
You know what?
Damn,
that could actually be a decent premise, right? Like every episode follows a different person, and the assumption is. They're going to be a replicant. And knowing that, sometimes watching the journey is fun, even though you know they're not going to do this, right? They are just not going to do this. I know it for a fact, right? But it could be interesting, right? Like, here's 10 disparate people, and every episode, they're a replicant, right?
Some people notice the origami on the welcome mat. Some people don't. Yeah.
Okay, we're getting back to Free League. That was a real nice touch in Chariot of the Gods.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody interacts with, right? Right. Yeah.
No, that's true. Yeah. So I don't know. And what's the date? This is early enough announcement, so that it's right. It may get stuck in pre-production hell. Who knows? So we may or may not, depending on the success of Lord of the Rings, see what's going on. And, you know, management shakeups and stuff in Amazon. Who knows, you know, what can happen in the following years. So anything you wanted to...
I've been wasting my time.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Kind of after the... I guess it was after the discussion of Critical Role we did last week. Mm-hmm. I have been working almost nonstop doing kids' textbook layout at work, which, since I'm not having to write text, I can listen to words.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I said, okay, you know what? Fine. I've listened to now like mostly three episodes of like Campaign 3 of Critical Role. And... I've kind of come to a epiphany or whatever. Critical Role is and kind of deserves to be held up as the quintessential D&D actual play, right? Because when I started watching, I'm confident saying yes, this is kind of how D&D plays, right? Because when I first started watching, okay, character introductions, I'm like, buddy, we're going on 2 hours of like scenery chewing voices where these people interact, and I'm like, I started getting real mad on Twitter, as expected. I'm like, why are we playing D&D, right? Like, if you are going to be this hands-off with the mechanics, why the fuck are we using this game, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then we had a fight and a couple stuff. And then I realized, oh, okay. And the Critical Role style is the cast acts. They bullshit with each other in character as they make their way to Mercer's next plot point, where we have an encounter, where we engage with the rules, and then it's more bullshitting as we go along to the next plot point, right?
Interesting, yeah, yeah.
So that's why I said, I think this is how D&D is supposed to work, right? Like, we always hear about, like, GMs doing prep. Mercer's obviously prep stuff. Like, he's obviously pretty much in control of the story. I'm sure he does a decent job incorporating player or character backstories into the events, but it's very much... I'm driving the train. Oop, everybody at the station. Here's an encounter. Oop, back on the train. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Character. Oop, here's the station. Go out, right? That's what it is. And I think that's how D&D is supposed to play. So I also understand now why Mercer gets held up as like an excellent GM. Because we've talked before about how binary pass-fail mechanics. Like the only thing D&D kind of does is like spit out hit, miss, damage. And I'm just listening to him do like paragraph long exposition and narration of these combats. And they are amazing as fuck. It's all him.
Yeah.
Right? It is all him and the players narrating these epic moments. And all the die did is do, oh, you missed. Right? Or, oh, 8 points of damage. Right?
Right.
Again, that's what D&D does. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's not a lot of support to the mechanics. Not support to the mechanics, right? But it's like all the mechanics do are tell you whether you hit or missed or passed or failed and how much damage you do. There's very little that the system does to help with the narration other than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I do not enjoy that style of game. I don't enjoy that style of play, but I can certainly like appreciate what they're doing now. And like, yes, I feel this is D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Not watching it. Because for me, it's boring.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
It also seems like the players' choices don't really matter, right? Like, okay, who got dropped to 0 hit points? Did he defeat the enemy? Okay, well, you're probably going to, because otherwise the campaign's just going to stop.
Right.
But like, but it's like, okay, once we get out of combat, it's like I said, kind of like back on the rails to this next encounter. And everyone seems to be enjoying it. I'm sure, like I said, Matt is incorporating backstory choices into the things he is planning. It is very much not player driven.
Yeah, interesting.
So,
and the fact that you know, they're making these characters that people are doing fan art and kind of loving the characterization, and so they can't die, or if they do, it has to be very well planned. So it's like this beautiful melodramatic farewell to.
It's also real hard to die in D&D, I think.
Yeah, right. Anyway. Keep death saving.
But interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be fun to do a look at. I mean, because we'd have to start with Critical Role as the base because it's the most popular. And then what people have done, like variations or different takes on that, the like most successful, or at least like the biggest budget actual plays. Because I was really surprised that G4 TV, their invitation to party, they just get up and are walking around. And so they're doing this like amateur theater thing in like this center ring. It's like, that's really disruptive and odd.
But I think you could, kind of comparing that to Dina, I've watched like 5 minutes of that G4 thing. Like, but you could do it because almost like with Critical Role, right? The other thing they have planned is they have beautiful like three-dimensional maps they'll bring out during combat. And I'm like, you are damn well playing that combat.
Yeah, right.
Because some intern worked like months to put that thing together, right? So there are no left turns on this train, right? But like just because they're sitting around a table, there's a few D20 rolls. You could absolutely walk around
and narrate
character conversations and what happens, right? Mm-hmm. Because my gut reaction was we are not engaging with the rules. Then I realized, no, we are engaging with the rules. It's just D&D is very hands fucking off at this point in the game because there's no tactical grid and combat doesn't matter right now. So
interesting, yeah. And that's teaching, you know, that show is teaching a lot of people how to play the game. So,
I kind of mentioned that on Twitter too. I was like, I tried to be very diplomatic about it. I'm like, okay, I wonder what percentage of new people to the hobby came in because of Critical Role. I would like to know what their expectations were when they kind of first sat down at the table and whether Critical Role affected those expectations or not, right?
Yeah.
My gut reaction is, you're fucking up the hobby, guys, right? But like, maybe I'm wrong, right? And hopefully I'm wrong, right? But
yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's going to take a lot. Oh, I have I have made it through a few episodes of their animated series.
Oh, really? Okay.
And that is just stock, you know, Korean studio animation, like all the Warner Brothers, DC Comics stuff and everything. It's real similar to that. The characters, they really needed the first episode really had this burden of like making you like these characters, or at least know who they are if you don't know anything about the setting and the player characters, and it didn't do that. And there's just a lot of F-bombs and
there's a lot of
sex,
on the show too.
Yeah, like weird sex references and stuff. And it's like, oh, that's edgy. Not really. I mean, it's weird, and especially when it's that very sterile. That sterile, you know, direct-to-video kind of animation. I think they hurt themselves not going with a more unique look for the show and everything, because it looks really standard, and it's probably. They can control. I mean, it came out, so that's one thing that it has above like the Warhammer animation and stuff. But they can't get that stuff finished. But it definitely could have used a unique or an interesting approach to the animation to kind of connect you to that setting a little more, because it's really really sterile and odd.
Do you think that's because they're playing D&D? And not necessarily, because I mean, like before the cast, we were kind of talking about how over the years Hasbro and WotC has kind of made D&D lore rather uninteresting because you have to accommodate everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's the standard high fantasy game, which means nothing really stands out. And I'm not saying Critical Role did that on purpose, but I mean, do you think that's possibly an effect of the game they were using, where it's like, we got to incorporate all these elements in it?
Yeah, that's well.
So
that's
it kind of washes
point.
Everything out.
Yeah, because the when they do it for the DC Comics, the kind of classic story arcs in DC Comics, they do that kind of boring Korean animation. You ignore it. It's fine because you want that story. You want to enjoy an animated version of that story. And so that's true. It might just be that there's just not much there. And visually, if they really went into pre-production and really gorgeous art direction. Mm. Like, what are we supposed to do? It might be quite a challenge to make it interesting.
Something else that was kind of relatedly boring is I've started trying to watch The Witcher again, up to like season 1, episode 5. I don't care about the backstory, right? And it's obviously not bog standard fantasy, but it kind of feels that way. Where I'm just like, we got some evil mages, we got some mystical druids over here, and who's these princesses? I don't care, right? Like, I think we've talked before. Like, I'm sure it jumps around chronologically,
Well, yeah, the thing I...
Fuck, I know, I don't care, right?
And they even dissed the fans in the second season. There's a reference in the second season. Because the thing I hated that was kind of unforgivable in that first season is they have this dramatic tension where they're cutting between characters. Yep, yep. And then you realize at some point, oh, that happened like 200 years apart or whatever. It's like,
spoilers.
It's like there was no tension. That they weren't even related. That, you know, that felt really like stupid and cheap. And then they made a reference to that. It's like, oh, people, were so frustrated with our time difference. They made a point of saying that. It's like it was just a bad choice. But that choice is coming up more and more. People are using a time gimmick. Mm. It's like you don't know when this really takes place, do you? Mm. And I think that worked. The only series that I enjoyed, or I think that worked particularly well, was the first season of Westworld.
Okay,
because it was artificial.
Yeah,
it was like, you know, robots, artificial, they don't age. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, they're going to look the same. And yep. That was a nice trick that made the story more interesting. But just doing that for the sake of, well, there's nothing else to do. What are we either going to tell the story out of order, or we're going to do weird time, you know, tricks.
Yeah. Bring it to tabletop RPGs. Do you think you could do that in a game? And would it be fun, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I've seen before people have suggested, okay, start the session, you're fucking D&D again, level 20 characters, you're up against the boss, and like right before the combat ends or something, like we're going to go 20 years earlier.
Yeah.
Right? And then like, ooh, which,
yeah,
if you got buy-in from players, that could be really fun. But I wonder if it would work to do like time jumps around.
That's a gimmick I've seen in like, you know, JRPGs and especially the mobile ones where they show you what your character is going to be at level 100 and how powerful you are, and you're fighting the big boss, but you're defeated and then you start at level 1 and you have to kind of build back up. That might be a fun gimmick on the tabletop because you are insanely powerful and roll, you do 4,000 damage, whatever, and then, you know,
this is a JRPG, right?
And then it knocks you, you know, you either memory loss or whatever, and
now
you
you're
back
doing
to...
I think that'd be much like a jailbreak scenario. I think that would be something you've got to be like, This is the idea that we're doing. Everybody on board? Cool, cool. Okay, cool. Yeah, because imagine going, I'm going to take
this. I'm going to erase the zeros and you're one, not 100, one again. Yeah.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't know. There might be some fun way to do, and especially because, you know, if the character at that highest level like failed or was corrupted, and this is their, you know, their kind of reincarnation loop or something, this is a chance to do it right this time.
Right.
That might be a fun kind of thing.
Relatedly, we didn't talk about it. That made me think of the Dark Souls
TTRPG,
right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because there is time travel, but the idea there is like, you got defeated by the boss. You're back to that last bonfire you set up, right? And I mean, in the video game, which I've never played and will never play because I don't play video games, that is, you know, okay, that's the boss's attack pattern, or now I know this little bit or whatever, and you try again, and you, the player, are getting better.
Mm.
I wonder if they're going to try and replicate that in the TTRPG.
They had a live stream.
How?
Yeah. They had a live stream with a Q&A, and I didn't hear a lot of it, but a couple of things that I heard, I was just like, really?
Because plus one to that stat. Oh boy.
It was a little too gamified because they were talking about, you know, a kind of encumbrance and items as slots. They're going to kind of simplify it to slots. And for certain bosses and certain situations, you want to change your loadout.
Yep.
And so you're just carrying all this armor and all these weapons.
Well, that's
and you
no
just
different from any other fantasy tabletop RPG, right? Let me pull out my 10-foot pole.
Yeah,
it just like a 5-foot wide crawl space.
Yeah, I don't know. But it does, it's, you know, going to be super, like you were asking, like, do you talk to NPCs in a village or whatever? I think it's going to be so strategy and so combat oriented. Maybe there'll be a little bit of interaction with the lore, but it's mostly about, okay, team, let's get in there. And, you know, I don't know. A couple of things that they were talking about really turned me off, and they were pushing really hard against, you know, we do have a lot of miniatures from this board game.
Well, we talked about that before, right? I mean, okay, can't blame you for pushing the product. It's probably part of your contract.
And they're going to, and they are even saying, you know, they're repackaging them specifically for how the adventures and things in the RPG are structured, so you can buy what you need. You don't have to buy the big, you know.
Have I mentioned that I will gladly push product if people were to sponsor it, right? however you got to do to make it, just be upfront about it, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. If we get a review copy of Dark Souls,
I would play them. Hey, you know what? As much as I bash other games, if someone sent us a few review copy, I'd play it.
It'd be all over it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All over it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I have to go back to that live stream and really see what else they're talking about. The few things that they mentioned were kind of a turn off as it doesn't sound like it.
Well, I wonder who the target market is for that game. Just like kind of people in general who are going to buy this as like a kind of a collector's thing or the small overlap of groups between tabletop RPGers and video game players, or are they hoping it's actually going to be kind of a gateway either way?
Yeah, right? I think because they had the license for the board game and they may have seen how many indie RPGs are kind of emulating that feel, that like kind of hopelessness and, you know, the feel of that video game, that maybe they said, let's do the licensed one because, and they led with the $100 limited edition rule book. That's the first thing you can pre-order. It's like, okay, so when's the game coming out?
Yeah,
so that was a little bit. So that, they are going for the collectors, I think, people that are fans of that, because there is a lot of merchandise and support for that game. There's a lot of stuff you can buy if you're a fan of dying.
Again and again and again,
Yes. Anyway. So, well, speaking of playing games at the tabletop. Free League just sent out an announcement about their organized play program.
All right.
So it's basically going to be resources for game masters, and that's going to involve scenarios for all of their major RPGs annually. They promised at least annually. They have a set already of what they're going to release, and they promise in the coming months there'll even be more. Cool. So these are intended for sessions that are organized at conventions, local game stores, just events and kind of promotion for
right their, based their on games. The fact they called them free agents, I kind of imagine you are kind of set up to be like an ambassador to the Free League games, and my voice is going
right. Yeah, so this is going to involve then closed forum discussions for game masters, and a lot of they said they're going to offer in the PDFs and things a lot of tips and kind of guidance for how to run these games, because it is a pretty diverse catalog of games that they have, newsletters, and everything will be available as downloadable PDFs. Cool. And there'll also be exclusive convention giveaway things, so probably incentives to join the sessions. So far, what they've listed is for Viessen, Winter's Tale, the Alien RPG, Fallout. These are the names of the scenarios. The Runes of Simborum, which I think Runes is the 5e. Yeah, I think it's the 5e one. Blight Knight. Regular Simborum is Sleepless in the Mist, Coriolis, Tymir and the Palace of Dreams, Tales from the Loop, The Haunted House, and Forbidden Lands, Shadow of Over Long Harbor.
What did Alien get?
Alien was Fallout, and these may be smaller, more digestible scenarios, just to kind of introduce the game to people, and also maybe give it as a jumping off point for a longer campaign. But their little promotion was time to go on an adventure. Do you long to open portals of wondrous worlds for friends and strangers alike? Now you have the chance to become a free agent. Today we have launched our official organized play program for game masters all over the world, the League of Free Agents. So that's nice. They're doing it worldwide because it's already between Europe and North America. Right. They have a lot of market, but so I'm thinking this space is looking more and more like a local game shop.
Yeah,
that will be hosting Free League organized play sessions. But I was happy to see that, and they're really going hard to support what they're doing. I mean, they're doing a lot of licensed IP games, but then they're also supporting all of that, and it's getting to the point where how big is their staff, because they keep doing releases of things that have either kickstarted or they have released from IPs, but they're supporting them. Like Alien keeps getting books, and there's already announcements for the Twilight 2000 is getting another book. So
Blade Runner soon too.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. But if they can get the support, and if they have a big enough presence at conventions and things, that this is going to help that a lot. There'll be a lot more available to try these games at the tabletop.
Yeah, get them in now before, hopefully the pandemic will get solved.
Yeah.
And conventions will happen again. But
No, that's true. It'll be hopefully that things will be returning to normal. But they do say, because you know these are PDFs, this is also for online play.
Right,
so
right.
If you're going to do an online convention, an online event, we'll support that as well.
That's cool.
So yeah, they're prepared for however long this is going to last, where we can't see each other in person. But yeah, so that was a nice notification to get. And I'll put the link, if you'd like to become a free agent, I'll put the link in the description, and I'll be clicking on that link myself, perhaps. I'm just curious to see what the program is like.
I am too, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so it's good. And they do a good job. Their support materials are gorgeous for everything they do, so I'm hoping it'll be good. All right, so after that cough... where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I'm currently ranting about parenting stuff. Not TTRPG related.
Not on the tabletop at all?
Nope. Right. I like to drop my kid to the tabletop and just eat your breakfast, please. How about you?
Nice. So I'm still doing my single panel gag cartoon. I had to do a makeup stream yesterday, so people that are on this chat may have been there. And... So I draw a single panel gag cartoon live on stream, abuse cartoons on all social media, and Twitch and YouTube is where you can find it, and Facebook as well.
Ooh.
And
you mean Metaverse.
Yeah, on Meta, soon to be, soon I'll be drawing in a virtual space before your eyes. And my avatar is going to be it. All right. If you'd like to support what we're doing here with The Weekly, please visit patreon.com/upturntable and become a weakling, the strongest of all patrons. And you can also click the join button below this video on YouTube to be a YouTube member. And thank you for all the members, K5, Avaro, and everyone that is in chat for... as YouTube members. And so for right now, because it's kind of Mutant Chronicle themed, or the popularity of the channel is Mutant Chronicle themed, as you progress in months of membership, the iconography of your megacorporation changes.
Nice. That's right. Yeah, it's a megacorp, yeah.
Yeah, so you start with Mishima and you work your way up. So we'll see what the most elite long-lived corp
capital.
All right. So that's it for this week.
Yeah.
We'll be back to do this again next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.